You're listening to the only show that takes your brothers won't out into the wilderness with your own personal guide, Mr. Will Chris, the Pilgrim, on the 405.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks here on this bright, sunshiny, warm day in Laguna Beach. We've been talking to lots of people and getting some information. The last couple of weeks we've been talking to CEOs and entrepreneurs and people who are creating opportunities for new jobs. In the midst of that, somebody handed me a book by Jim Clifton, the CEO of the Gallup poll. His book is called The Coming Jobs War, and I'd seen it around, but I hadn't really picked it up. And when I read it, I was thunderstruck. I've been talking to people around about it, and the other day I had a chance to talk to Glenn Hansen of One Accord Partners, and we kicked off a conversation about what needs to happen to generate new jobs. Clifton points out that we need to have an inordinately large number of new jobs in the next couple of years to keep our GDP up, to help supply the tax base so we have good schools, so that we can deal with debts in states and have good roads, and all the things that we come to, I guess, just acknowledge and kind of accept as part of our heritage of having a good culture, a good environment, a good infrastructure for us to bustle in. So in talking with Glenn, we begin to talk about what it is that gets in the way of creating new jobs. So I want to welcome Glenn Hansen from One Accord Partners, regional director of One Accord Partners. Welcome, Glenn.
Hi, Will. Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about what One Accord Partners is first.
Well, we help companies grow their profitable revenue. We do that through interim executive engagements. Most of the partners in One Accord have been our former CEOs who have had a lot of success, various different industries and areas of specialty. And we go in and usually a part-time, temporary position, roll our sleeves up, work with the CEO and his team, help get the right processes and the right people into place and to drive revenue and sustain healthy revenue. Then we'll help him to, he or she, to identify and develop a person that can run it, or help them identify somebody from the outside who can come in who would be much less expensive than hiring someone that has been a successful full-time CEO, but has, you know, having that kind of experience and skills is great to be able to come in a part-time temporary fashion, bring in someone less expensive that can operate it after that.
Okay. So, you know, we were talking the other day about how job creation is ultimately tied to new revenue growth. It's tied to sales. Until a CEO believes he's getting new revenue and needs more people to handle the back end, to supply, to fulfill, he's not going to be moving on creating new jobs, right?
Yeah, no, not at all. I think what I've seen in the last few years since 2008 is that in most industries, their, you know, market share has shrunk. Some competitors of any business may have gone away. And what's happened in a lot of businesses is they've scaled back. They've reduced costs. They've maybe laid off some people. They're doing less business. And, however, they may have tried a variety of things in terms of growth strategies, but if they're not doing the right things because, you know, they just don't know what they don't know, it becomes like throwing things against the wall, see if it'll stick.
Glenn, I'm having difficulty hearing you here, so what we're going to do is go to a commercial and then have my producer call you back, and let's get a better line here.
Okay.
Can we talk about your family business?
You know, that thing you put your whole life's blood, sweat, and tears into? Well, what happens when you retire or try and pass that business on to your children? At Succession Strategies, we can help you find the answers. We'll guide you through the unsettling process of protecting your family legacy and successfully passing your business on to the next generation, safely and securely, ensuring that it'll both survive and thrive for generations to come. So ask yourself just one question. Can I really afford to wait? Take the first step. Take our complimentary self-assessment at successionstrategies.com or call us at 714-560-9022 to set up a free consultation at your convenience. That's succession-strategies.com. Okay, let's see. We got Glenn on the line here.
Yes, sir.
All right, much better. You sound clear. Can you hear him there, Will?
I can hear you fine.
Oh, good.
All right. So, Glenn, let's just start over. Tell us a little bit about One Accord Strategies, and we'll get this put together.
Sure. So we help businesses grow their profitable revenue, and we do this through the interim executive method. So most of the folks in One Accord are former CEOs. They've run companies, little companies, large companies, had a lot of success. Most of them are at a point in their life and or career where they don't so much want to go back and be an operator, but they absolutely love going in and taking their skills and their experience and helping others. So we go in, typically, a very common engagement. We'll be working with a company a couple of days a week for 6 months or so. We go in, roll our sleeves up, so to speak. We work with the team. We bring the things that are necessary. Oftentimes, there's more than one of us working on an engagement because sometimes we do things. We have different areas of specialty or different industry experience. My experience is in retail. So I was working an engagement in retail, and somebody else was working on their e-commerce because he's really good at that, and I stink at that. So we help get the right people, the right processes in place to rapidly increase revenue, which usually the tip of the spear there is in sales. Then we'll help with the things necessary to sustain ongoing acceleration of revenue. Then we'll help to either develop somebody from within or find somebody from outside the company that can come in and operate the things that we put in place and continue to grow them.
All right, so let's pick up the conversation that we were working on the other day. Let me give you a quote from Jim Clifton's book, Becoming Jobs War. He says, as of 2008, the war for good jobs has trumped all other leadership activities because it's been the cause and the effect of everything else that countries have experienced. This will become even more real in the future as global competition intensifies. If countries fail at creating jobs, their societies will fall apart. Countries, and more specifically cities, will experience suffering, instability, chaos, and eventually revolution. This is the new world that leaders will confront. And he goes on to use Detroit as an example of that. What do you think?
I couldn't agree with him more. Small businesses is what generates most of new job growth in the United States. And a lot of people don't realize that, I think. They may think, well, what's the big deal if I grow and I hire another 10 people or another 100 people? Actually, I met with a CEO and his leadership team today. of iView Technologies, who has an exciting new technology for retail to use on mobile apps. And currently, he's got 18 employees, and his business plan, which they're doing great on, has him on track to have 10 times that many employees by next year. It's businesses like that that are growing, businesses that we need to grow, that will make the difference. Because, you know, if we have good job growth and low unemployment, that brings prosperity to our cities, our states, our country, where the flip side of that, you know, if we have long-term high unemployment, it ruins people's lives, which in turn dilapidates cities and even countries.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what we're seeing, is that without jobs, people have no purpose, and so it's not only GDP growth and tax base, it's also human beings, right?
Yeah, at the very foundation. You know, when a small business owner hires even one person, he gets to provide not only a job for that person, but then that person is able to provide for their family. And that's got long-reaching, wonderful ramifications. Businesses that are growing and get to hire more and more people, those CEOs and those business owners get to enjoy the satisfaction and the purposeful, meaningful endeavors of providing jobs for people, which means their families can live well and be healthy, their kids can go to school, and you know, et cetera.
Yeah,
I know. I talked with Dick Schultz about that once. Dick Schultz was the founder and former CEO of Best Buy, and at the point at which the company was doing tens of billions of dollars a year, in talking with him, it was very clear to me that what really lit him up was the legacy that he left behind of all the families that he had contributed to that were able to have jobs and careers and benefits and all the things that come with that.
Yeah. So lots of people seem to be under the impression that it's huge companies that drive America, right?
Well, that's wrong. Yeah, certainly they contribute, but if I remember right, in Jim Clifton's book, he listed the number of large enterprise companies, and it's dwarfed compared to the millions of small companies that are in the country. And even if a McDonald's or Starbucks or Target or Home Depot open some new stores and hire some more people, it's not even a drop in the bucket compared to small businesses that both start up and grow across our nation. When small businesses are healthy, people are working and our economy is getting strong.
Yeah, so what he says is that they're only about out of the 6 million businesses in the United States. This was in 2007. Out of the 6 million businesses, there are only about 1,000 companies with more than 10,000 employees.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he says that there's slightly more than 88,000 companies with 100 to 500. And about 18,000 with 500 to 10,000, but 99% of those 6 million businesses have fewer than 500 employees.
Mm-hmm.
99% of 6 million.
Yeah.
seems to me that
that's why it's so important. That's
leverage here is going to be when those smaller businesses begin to add new employees, and that may be one or two at a time, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. When you have millions of businesses adding one or two at a time, that means millions of people are going to work.
What do you think is getting in the way?
Well, I think there are two or three common keys. One is that, and this is what I have seen over the last few years, up until 08, a lot of businesses were doing fine by however they were functioning, their status quo. And then once the economic downturn slammed us, a lot of businesses scaled back. They laid people off, they cut costs, those sort of things. And then a little later they realized, wow, this could go on for a while. I need to have a growth strategy. So maybe they hired some salespeople where they hadn't really done that before, or maybe they tried some new marketing or some new advertising or various things in an attempt to grow their business. But because those are not their areas of specialty, developing and executing a strategic plan that is going to grow their business is something that they miss on. And I've talked to innumerable business owners over the last few years that face just that kind of a problem. So they don't know what they don't know. It's not that it's necessarily going to be hard to grow their business, but there's a lot of things that they're good at in their business and their industry. There are other things that they're clueless about. So that's one problem there. Another is, I would say, fear, confusing investment spending with cost cutting. So what I mean by that is when times are tough and cash flow is tight, you have to manage your costs very carefully and make sure that you're not doing everything you can to keep from going into the red. But when you're talking about doing something to grow, that's an investment. It's like, the difference between buying a new BMW 7 Series versus buying a house. Well, maybe a house isn't a good example these days, but traditionally, a house is an investment. Whereas a car is going to depreciate, and you can get to and from work in a $30,000 car or a $100,000 car. That's your choice, but that's a cost. Where you invest in the house, that's an investment. When you invest into growing your business, it needs to be seen as that. Now, a wise investment is investing in, if it's a growth strategy, it's a well-thought-out and well-executed growth strategy. So fear is the second thing. And then a third thing that that I've seen commonly, Will, is I would call it pride. Maybe you could call it ego, where the CEO just isn't willing to sort of grip the mirror and admit that he needs help. He might blame it on the economy. He might blame it on his employees. He might blame it on some bad luck or something like that, but not really willing to go, man, I could use some help. So those are, I would say for me, those are the three big areas that I've seen that inhibit job growth.
All right. So there's the business owners cut back in response to the downturn. And they're afraid of what's going to happen next. That's one. Mm-hmm. Two, there's a difference between cost-cutting and investment for growth, and people aren't really clear about that, that it's not just getting through by reducing the cost. If we're going to thrive, we're going to have to invest for growth. And then finally, right. The CEO is not willing to What I would say is that there are people in the world who live on that river in Egypt called denial, right?
Exactly.
And so
I've been on that river, by the way.
What's that? What do you say?
I've been on that river.
Oh, I think we all do. I think we all have boats and slips over there. Yes, indeed. And well, it does take some people we trust to help us get off of that river, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so as we begin to talk about what we can do to help remove some of these obstacles, it seems to me that what's really essential is that number one, that we got to change the attitudes of people. We've got to move from fear to where, where we as a country have historically been to a measured optimism and a can-do and a confidence that we can accomplish what we set out to do.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get really clear about that, about what kind of investment we're trying to make, what the targets are, and how to measure that so we're making progress toward those goals. And then finally, it's in some sort of collaborative place where we're allowing people to get rid of the denial and recognize if the leadership doesn't pick up and move, it's not going to happen.
Right.
Well, how do you think we go about doing that?
Boy, that's a great question. I'll give you an example. I think this is a good example because it's a small business. A couple months ago, I started working with a business that's been doing about $1 million a year and stuck there. You know, profitable, not making money hands over fist, but positive cash flow. The owner is pedaling as hard and fast as he can. He can't really work any harder and not get his life all out of balance. So he and I talked, and he hired me. And so we've been doing some things to help him grow. And now, this week, he hired a new person. So from his, it was himself and three other employees. Now he's got a fourth employee. Well, that's, that's like what, 33% more workers in his business. Because, now he can see the business coming in and he's willing to make that investment. It's a little bit of risk for him. He's probably going to go through a couple months where, he's got less EBITDA or less net operating profit at the end of the month. But he's willing to make that investment because he knows, he believes that it will help him grow. And, in fact, it will.
Now, when we think about that growth, there's certainly some personal investment in that, and there's some personal success for the CEO as a good leader when he's got good EBITDA, he's got increasing revenue. There's some personal satisfaction, right?
Oh, I think big time.
And it also goes into, to his bank account. He gets a share of that. At the same time, it seems to me that now we're in a place where this is also a community commitment. Adding jobs, creating an environment where other people are encouraged to add jobs, changing attitudes toward hope and reasonable expectation, doing that seems to me to be a very important part of increasing the probability that our lifestyle is going to be intact as we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not just the individual capitalist out there, individual leader out there on his own. This becomes a community effort, a regional. At least that's what Clifton is saying. He's saying this is let's not get into politics because it's not going to happen from Washington. It's going to happen locally, regionally. That's where the jobs are going to be added. They're going to be added, because people like you and me help. They're going to be added because the people that we work with are confident and willing to do what's necessary to add, to increase their revenue, add new jobs. Would you agree?
I do agree, Will, totally. I think regardless of what the obstacles are, you know, successful entrepreneurs find a way over, under, around, or through. The small company that I just spoke about, they're located in Rancho Santa Margarita, a little company called Frontgate Media. You know, part of their clientele is in the Christian music industry, which is the bottom has dropped out of that industry. So, you know, part of the strategic approach is to do the other things that they do really well for their different types of clients and bring, you know, more focus in the strategic approach in those other areas. And so they're able to grow, even though a significant part of what was traditionally their market share has lopped off. So part of what we're doing for them is teaching their salespeople how to sell and how to manage their time and how to be get in, you know, speaking with more potential clients.
And that really is what it comes down to, isn't it? Because there's a lot of people out there who are more order takers than salespeople.
Yes, and that's, I think, also really common where the people on the sales team or called salespeople are more glorified. They're knowledgeable, but they're really taking orders. Where if, you know, if people learn how to engage with customers and to prospect and to enjoy it, have a culture of role playing and help people to improve in their skill. You know, professional athletes will have coaches that help them and they practice every day. The most successful professional salespeople gain new skills and they practice every day instead of just do selling without any practice. So there are two ways to grow sales with a sales team. One is to help them get better at what they do, and that includes that improves their close ratio. In other words, if they used to make a sale with 4 out of every 10 potential customers they talk to, maybe they improved to 6 or 7 or 8 out of 10. So that's one way. And then the other is instead of just talking to 10 customers a day, if they can get to where they're talking to 12 or 15 or 20, and there's strategies to help that to happen, then that too will create more sales.
Okay. All right. So I want to talk a little bit more about this. Can you stick around after the break here?
Sure will.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
I'm Al Strauss with Sandler Training. Talk to you about rule number 38. The problem the prospect brings you is never the real problem. When people have heard this rule and thought about it a bit, if they've been in sales for more than a few months, they almost always say, well, that's obvious. I've had lots and lots of prospects that told me what they wanted, I showed them what they wanted, and they didn't buy it. So it seems that it would be obvious. The problem is, most folks don't understand it, and you get in the middle of the conversation, and here's a prospect who's interested in something, you've got the something, and you just show up. And what you really need to learn how to do is ask a bunch more questions, because frankly, in most cases, the prospect doesn't even understand what the real problem is. And so if you ask 3 or 4 more questions about what they claim they need or are looking for or want, you're going to discover that it morphs, it changes, sometimes dramatically. What they end up needing is perhaps even diametrically opposed to what they originally said they were looking for. So ask the questions, don't take the first thing they give you, dive down into the real issues, and you're going to have yourself a much better day selling to this prospect.
Do you recognize them in your office? It's a common problem for executives and employees everywhere. There's John, over there. He just seems to have his own vision. Unfortunately for you, it's not your company's vision. Then there's Mary, who always seems to fall short of what's expected. You've got people that need to turn it up a notch if you're ever going to hit your goals. The never-ending cost of losing people and having to train the rookies. You constantly worry about losing key people you have become too dependent on. Extended Disc is designed for business owners, executives, and employees just like you. Extended Disc provides you with information to make better business decisions with confidence. Extended Disc helps you and your organization to be more profitable by avoiding decisions that result in expensive mistakes, wasted resources, and time. You see the problem. Extended Disc, the solutions you need to push performance and growth. It's time you made a call to Extended Disc for the solutions you need. Extended Disc, toll free, 1-800-257-7481, or go to www.extendeddisc.com.
And now back to Will and his guest.
All right, so, you know, we begin looking at some of the issues that are there, helping people who in the previous economic excitement were able to take orders, and now they really have to become salespeople. And so Glenn Hansen from One Accord and I have been talking about this whole notion of what do we need to do to create jobs. We're looking at Jim Clifton's book, Why the Coming Job Wars, and what we're concluding is, along with Jim Clifton, that one of the things that needs to happen in order to bring on new jobs, create new jobs, is we have to increase sales, have to increase revenue. And we're looking at some of the obstacles that get in the way of increasing revenue. And we got up to the point in our conversation where we were talking about how salespeople have to become competitive, professional, competent salespeople, and that's more than just an order taker. So how do we do that? What do you do in your work that helps people do that, Glenn?
I do a number of things. Usually at the beginning, if there's a sales manager, I sit down with the sales manager and I find out about, what kind of training the people have had or have ongoing, whether or not there's a culture of role-playing to continue to hone and improve skills, whether or not he or she sits down with the members of the sales team as individuals and a team on a regular basis, whether or not he helps them to create and manage a plan of their activities. Activities meaning, over the course of the week, when and how many cold calls or warm calls, follow-up calls, on-site visits, presentations, proposals, those kinds of things, all of which lead to making sales. So I want to find out, are the salespeople being, managed in a way that is really helping and supporting them and at the same time providing a level of accountability to be sure that they're doing the right kinds of things. And then whether or not the sales manager is actually spending time with the salespeople during the sales process. That might be sitting side by side with them when they're on the phone. It might be going out to on-site visits. If the sales manager is a proficient salesperson, do they model any of the behaviors, whether it's during role-playing or during actual interface time with customers, because all those things combined, some quality training and some quality sales management, motivation, which brings in fun and competition, put all those things together, and that generates more sales very quickly, but it's easier said than done. People who have never done it before can't just go, oh, okay, I'm going to do all those things and go and do it. And that's why professionals who have been doing it for years, who have a track record of success, substantive training, can really make a difference. And frankly,
Sandler Training is providing that. And by the way, I don't work for Sandler Training, don't get anything from them, but I have been exposed to some of their training, and that it's high quality stuff, and I think it's reasonably priced, and a lot of business owners out there would do well to get at least their sales manager through some of the manager training, if not the salespeople in there as well.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
that,
sure.
I appreciate that. Getting that sales manager to begin to see that his job is not to get more sales. His job is to develop his people. If he develops his people, he'll get more sales.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, his job is not to focus on the results, it's to focus on the behaviors.
Yes.
Big difference. Big difference.
Well,
let's begin to talk
about people.
Yeah,
if he can manage his people to the right behaviors and the right processes, be effective at that, he's going to be successful by helping them be successful. Actually, I love the way Zig Ziglar puts it. He said, you'll get everything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want.
Right. That's right. That's right. Well, I mean, developing those salespeople is critical. I mean, when those salespeople begin to believe that you are actually on their side of the table and you're there to, as a manager, you're there to help them achieve their personal and business goals, huge difference, huge difference.
Yeah. You know, if you look at professional athletes, say like golfers or tennis players, they might be number one in the world, or they might be in the top 50 of the world, but they hire other coaches who may not even play as well as they do, but they're really good coaches to help them to get better and to teach them, to observe them, to advise them and help them to get better little by little, day by day, month by month. And they pay those people big bucks for that, and that's part of becoming really, really good at your skill, at your trade. And for salespeople, it's not something where you just learn it one time and then you go do it. It's an ongoing process. It starts with getting some really good foundational skill training.
Yeah, and that's going to certainly help. And I think that's part of what we need to be out there help working with companies to bring into their sales team to help develop that. And it seems to me that really is going to be a citywide, countywide, regional-wide effort to improve the sales team, because the sales team is what brings in the revenue. And Clifton makes it very clear that this is it's going to be competition between cities, right? He talks about talks about the difference between Detroit and San Francisco. He talks about the difference between Austin flourishing and Albany declining, Sioux Falls booming and Sioux City is not. Those differences are there because people have made a decision, and it's not one by one. It's generally because a group of people have gotten together, and that's going to be the universities, the city leaders, powerful local leaders, business leaders, all of those folks coming together to make a decision, put together a plan, and to make the changes that are necessary.
Yeah, that would be...
When we look at it, there's some classic examples out there. I mean, Austin is one. Certainly, Silicon Valley, Route 128 in Boston. Those are places that have consciously, self-consciously gone about creating an infrastructure and environment that's going to generate new jobs. I don't think Silicon Valley just kind of happened out of a magical intervention from the sky. Do you?
No, there were many contributors to that, and continue to be, actually.
Yeah, and what Clifton says, in one of the sections when he talks about cities, he says that strong leadership teams are already in place within the top 100 cities in the United States. They're already there. He says, every city has strong, caring leaders working on numerous committees and initiatives to fuel their local economic growth. Now, what the feat that these leaders have to do is, to pull off is doubling their entrepreneurial energy by aligning all their forces.
Yeah.
I think that, that's part of the responsibility we have is to help align those forces and pull them together. I mean, he's calling this an all-out war. And he says it has to be a war on job loss, on low workplace energy, on healthcare costs, low graduation rates, brain drain, and community disengagement.
Yeah. And we've had a number of different types of forces working, you know, against us. But we've got to find, you know, ways over, under, around, or through those. You know, there have been more jobs getting outsourced to other countries. There have been, you know, regulations that have made it more difficult to do business, et cetera. But we've still got to find a way to grow. And there are ways to grow. You know, I would love to be a part of any group that wanted to come together and talk about how we could have an impact on our community, whether it's our city, our county. That would be tremendous if some leaders got together and began to brainstorm about what we could do as a group and as a community to do that, because then we could have our community be an example for others to follow with growing businesses that are hiring people.
Uh-huh. Well, can I tell you a little bit about what we're talking about doing?
Please.
What we're talking about doing is taking this radio show and turning it into a media outlet that's going to the conversation, and then also lift up CEOs and companies who are actually adding jobs. And by the first piece is to have panel discussions. For instance, you know, I sent the notes from Clifton's book to you, right?
Right.
And I sent it out to a number of other people. Jeff Schwartz was one, Tom Zender. I sent it to a friend of mine in Virginia, Bill Bergman, to Gustavo Chamorro over at the Digital Media Center at Santa Ana College, Michael Sawitz at Fast Start Studio. And all of these people have expressed interest in helping. And so what we're thinking about doing is pulling together panels of three people at a time and doing a radio show with them, and maybe in a place where we could have an audience around us. It doesn't have to be a big one, but we're thinking various areas that need to be aligned. One would be government. And so finding people in government or chambers, chamber of commerce, leadership teams, finding people who are really have a passion and a heart for increasing jobs. Taking three of those and putting them on and getting the conversation going about what do we need to be doing. We're also thinking about doing one with education. We've got we're going to be talking later on this week with the chairman of the chairperson of the Orange County School Board, and putting her together with some other educators, maybe from universities, and talking about what we can do to increase the ability of our graduates in their ability to take on jobs, significant jobs. Talking about how do we teach them entrepreneurship? Mm-hmm. Where are we going to have these folks who are going to take the jobs on that we need, that we can create? And so going through a whole panoply of community leaders, lifting them up and getting them to not just give us a 2-minute soundbite, but really spend 15, 20, 30 minutes each talking about what they believe we can do and help building that vision for where we want Orange County, Southern California, California, and through that, the country to be 10 years from now. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And that actually sounds like a real good start. That could be a catalyst put into motion some people that get together and really begin to have an impact to help small businesses grow.
Uh-huh. Well, I think, you know, I think it's a, we can get really excited about the USC-UCLA football team. if we can get just half as excited about our task, you can call it a jobs war, you can call it a jobs competition. We can get at half as excited as those football folks get. I think we'd make some progress here.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, if we stayed with the war theme, you know, entering into battle to win this thing, getting in to brainstorm, to build some strategy, and to begin to execute so that we can lead in this area and have an impact on our own community and subsequently having an impact on communities around ours.
Yes. Yeah, and I think using the technology that we have, I mean, doing video interviews with people around the country who are conscious capitalists. I mean, they're using the resources, some of the money, and the time that their employees have or their company has to actually improve the infrastructure. Now, I'm not talking about writing a check to Habitat for Humanity. That's important. I'm talking about something like what Schwartz did, at least the story that he told, up at Starbucks. Can I tell you that story?
No.
All right. So what I've heard that he did was they went out and said, it's time for us to build a new manufacturing plant. This was recent. We got to build a new manufacturing plant. And so the team came back and all the, you know, the bean counters and the pencil sharpeners came back and said, Malaysia, we'll build another plant in Malaysia. It cost us this much. And somebody, I don't know if it was Schultz himself or somebody on the team says, well, is there any possibility we could build that plant in the United States? I said, well, I don't know. We'll go look. So they came back and they said, well, if we put the plant in Georgia, it will cost us this many more basis points in our profit margin. Can you believe that? Thinking about where to put the plant only based upon profit margin.
Yeah.
And what they said was, we will spend that money, put the plant in Georgia.
Wow.
1,800 jobs.
Fantastic.
Now, they came back again and said, okay, well, that worked. Let's find out, where are all of the glasses and cups that, you know, that we sell in the stores? Where all that made? And they said, well, of course, that's made in China. And they said, well, just for grins, is there anybody in the United States who could do that? Well, they went through, looked, came back, you know, a couple of months later and said, nope, nobody can do it. We do not have a factory who can do that for us. And they said, well, go back and look one more time. So they came back and said, well, we found a factory in Ohio. It's boarded up, but they could do it. And so somebody on the leadership team said, go back to them and ask them, if we give that company, that manufacturing plant, a 5-year exclusive on all of our cups and glasses, would they open the plant? They did, and added 400 jobs.
I love it.
Now, I want to use this microphone to find people in the country who are doing things like that and more, and I want to make that a national experience for people so that we are actually seeing evidence and stories of people who are paying attention to what we need to do to make this country grow. And it's more than just the bottom line for shareholders. That's important, but it's also, how do we build the country, the infrastructure, all the, you know, the jobs that we need to have to give people quality of life and to provide the infrastructure for our country.
Yeah, I love what you're thinking there, Will, what you're going to do. I think those stories motivate people. They can be inspiring. And when you realize that other people are doing things like that, I think it would help move people in that direction to do likewise.
Can I put you down as one of the people that's going to help us do this?
You sure can. I'd love to be a part of that.
All right. Well, we're getting ready to hold I don't know what you call it, but we're going to have a webinar kind of, we're going to use all the technology we can come up with. We have a webinar because there are people all around the country who are talking about this with us. So we'll have a webinar kind of brainstorming session and see what we do to move forward next.
Fantastic. I'll look forward to that big time.
All right. So if somebody wanted to talk to you, Glenn, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, my email address is glenn.hansen@oneaccordpartners.com. That's glenn.hansen at one, spelled out O-N-E, Accord, A-C-C-O-R-D, partners.com.
All right. Is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Call me on my cell phone, 714-654-5134.
All right. This has been great. I certainly enjoy talking with you. I'm glad that I think you were on the webinar. Isn't that how I got your name? You were on the webinar?
Yeah, that was how.
Wonderful. Well, that's great. So all this technology does work. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Glenn, for being with us. We look forward to inviting you in to be part of our Brain Trust here to look at what we're going to do in Orange County, Southern California, and the rest of the state.
I will look forward to it.
All right.
Okay, well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there you have it. Important way of getting new jobs is helping CEOs to move forward, to get rid of the fear, to find out what's going on, what obstacles are in the way of generating more profitable revenue and more of that profitable revenue. And then finally, helping them to see that this is a problem we all have. This is not them alone. This new marketplace, this new world, we're all in it together, working to support each other, collaborate, and move forward. Because it's essential that we do that for the quality of life that we live in this region and in the country. So this is the Pilgrim on the 405. You heard the announcement. We are going to take this into a larger venue, and we're going to put together some ways of moving forward to encourage, lift up, point out, celebrate people who are creating new jobs and to help remove the obstacles that are in our way. So this is the Pilgrim on the 405. Great to be with you. Look forward to talking with you again. If you would like to hear some of our archives, they're at pilgrimonthe405.podbean.com, or they're on our radio station at octalkradio.net. If you know people who are hiring and you think it'd be good to celebrate their efforts, give me a call at 949-355-6013, or you can send me an email at willchrist@willchrist.com. Look forward to talking with you again on Pilgrim Talks and the Pilgrim on the 405 next Wednesday afternoon.
You've been listening to the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible, with your own personal guide, The Pilgrim on the 405.